This episode of Inspiration Point is brought to you by the Quests and Chaos Podcast Network and the generous patrons over on patreon.com/inspirationpoint. So we'd like to give a big shout out to
Garlic Bread, Eric, and Spike.
And at our Muse $20 level, we'd like to thank
Prostaskius, Leroy, Kate, Jeremy, Jenna, Jacob, Falangor, Cheryl, A Bad Idea, Red Dead Coquette, and Robert Hans.
Thank you for helping us bring a little inspiration out into the world. And now, on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Inspiration Point. It's me, Adam. And of course, I'm always joined with Tiana. Ren, hey, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How about yourself?
I am fantastic. I'm feeling really good. Last night we had a session of D&D, and it may not have been my player's favorite session, but it was definitely my favorite session.
I think it was one of my favorite sessions, mostly because I was able to come back into playing my own character again for the first time in like 4 sessions.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
So I was able to come back into playing Hakoi, which was really cool, and also spring all the stuff with them that you and I have been plotting for weeks.
Yes, absolutely. And I think
which is so much fun.
It delivered well too. I think we hit all the bullet points that needed to be hit. And I think the rest of the party knows enough to go on, but there's still enough mystery there that, you know, more baggage could always come up.
I mean, there's always more baggage.
Always more baggage. Remember that from Inspiration Point today. I had a coffee this morning also. I gave myself a quadruple shot.
Whoa.
Brown sugar oat milk shaken espresso. And yeah, I made it at home, so I didn't have to use like brown sugar syrup. You know, I just put in actual brown sugar.
That's what I use in my tea as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
It's great. I've got turned on to that when I was staying with a friend who had like homemade brown sugar and goats. So she had goat milk.
Oh, wow.
And that is like the most incredible tea I've ever had was homemade brown sugar and goat's milk. And ever since, I drink my tea with brown sugar and goat's milk and not goat's milk, brown sugar and regular milk, chasing that high.
Right. Yeah. Just one day, perhaps, to have a glimpse of that same thing. Oh, the other day I had asked my wife to pick me up one at the Starbucks, and then she didn't. Instead, she brought me one she made at home, and it was way better, you know? It was just way better.
I love that.
And so I was like, yeah, you made the right call. You
know? 4 shots, though. I wondered why you were a little fuzzy. You're, like, vibrating in place on the screen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, I still have years to make up for in the coffee realm. But that's neither here nor there.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about. A few people know what I'm talking about.
It took me a second, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
I also had a lot of fun last night because I miss Andrew, guys. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I miss this guy. He is just, you know, the silliest guy. And we miss our Andrew. So I made myself an absolute Andrew insert character in the form of Boogoo the ogre.
Boogoo is precious, and I mean, like, you say like, but also like, he's one of the most sincere people that I've met in this game, where just like heart and soul into it and very earnest. And I think you captured that very well with Boogoo, where it's like, I may not always know what's going on, but I'm going to drive into my understanding with all of my heart.
Right, yeah. And that's so Andrew.
Right? Insult intended.
No,
truly,
not at
I say
all.
This with the greatest love. You know,
well, I mean, it's so refreshing, right?
Yeah.
You know, especially in a setting like we're doing with Westgate, where it seems like everyone has a plot of something. You know, like everybody's trying to, you know, gain power or whatever. And we haven't even gotten that far into it. Like, we haven't even met that many noble people.
Yeah, yesterday was session 10, and, like, 4 of the sessions has been, oh, God, Hakoi got taken, get them back.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, was another example of really what today's topic is, right? The story has not exactly gone as intended. But also, that's also the intention, is to not intend. So Yes? No?
The intention is not to intend. I want that on a shirt.
Right. Maybe that could be the episode title. The intention is not to intend.
There we go.
So, yeah, because, guys, control is the enemy. All right? Good storytelling in terms of this activity that we do, these role-playing games, you know, I really think that the GM role is something that very much attracts control freaks, and yet the control freak, in order to ascend, right, in order to progress in their GM journey, must get over it, and they have to, like, go through that personal character arc, you know, as a person, to let it go, right? And you, yes, everyone knows, right?
I'm not singing it. I refuse.
We all did it in our heads, right? I didn't have to do it. But it's so helpful, right? And the more, like, preparation you make, the more control you can actually relinquish, which seems contradictory in a way. But you need confidence that the next moment you won't be like, break time, everybody. We just had a break 5 minutes ago. I said break time.
I need breaks so I can figure out what the heck we're doing next.
Every time you say anything, I get confused and I have to go back.
I can see that being the case, though, because the more that you prepare, like, the world and the given circumstances and what's going on around the characters, the more it can be like, no matter where they go, you know what they're going to run into.
Yeah, 100%. And so that way it makes you feel very secure. But that is also designed from a place of fear to a degree,
sure.
Right? And so when you design from a place of fear, when you are directing action and inserting yourself into these situations, you create a dissonance in the feeling that the group has. And that dissonance alienates them, whether or not they're even aware of it in the moment.
Sure.
A lot of players can see through the screen, which is to say they kind of get what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Especially more experienced players. You know, some of them will intentionally rub up against what you're doing, knowing full well what you're trying. Right? And others will try to facilitate you the best that they can. But in both cases, I kind of don't want that. Right? Not that I necessarily mind a helpful player. I mean, it's great. But I don't want them, especially if they're paying, I don't want them to feel like they have to run my game for me, if that makes sense.
I understand that impulse, but I'm not sure that's necessarily, because I tend to be more of a facilitating kind of player.
Right.
I don't ever feel like I'm having to help run the game. It's what I'm aligning myself so that what I want to do and what the GM wants to do are in the same direction.
Right.
So there isn't the gear grinding.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to look at it. Like, are we both telling a story?
Right.
What are
we telling, you know, at least a similar story, if not the same story?
Precisely. And that is totally fine, right? Not, Adam's scrambling.
Oh, I've never feel
and he's
like
freaking out.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I can see where that fear, but that's also a fear-based response, isn't it?
It is. No, you're right. It is. And again, fear is kind of weakness in this way. And, you know, not to sound too draconian, but, like,
You sound more like a biblical angel. Be not afraid.
Be not afraid. Thus saith the Lord. Let it go. Let it go. Can't
Dang
hold it.
It
back anymore.
Dang it.
That doesn't really rhyme. Shut up. I'm the angel here. Look at the wings. That means you don't talk.
It works better in the original Greek.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, the Aramaic. it doesn't make sense, so I'm going to pivot dodge. Anyways, one way that a lot of GMs can be control freaks is through being sort of punishing. I'm kind of the opposite, where I would say one of my biggest weaknesses of a GM is being overly merciful. And wanting to take care of my sweet little player babies, right? And to protect them from the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. And But I've realized that's also a form of control, right? It's the smothering mother archetype.
The helicopter parent.
The helicopter parent, right? The apron strings, if you will. And it is, it's just as bad. It is the empress flipped upside down, right? And it's the same problem. And man, last night was a test of of those things. And I thought you guys did just a wonderful job.
And so for those who weren't there, why don't you tell the story of what happened?
Actually, why don't you tell the story of what happened? I would much prefer to hear you talk about it.
Hear my perspective on it.
I want to hear your perspective on it.
Sure.
Because I might be completely skewed. Also, I'll probably give something away on accident.
Fair enough. I will be asking for help with names because I tried
100%.
I keep notes. I'm being much better about keeping notes. I'm increasing my strength in this campaign, but I'm bad at spelling.
Fantasy
names. They're hard. So we ended last session with the main bulk of the party fighting Kirin Kirsalai and a couple people finding Hakoi in a gibbet over a pool of magma. They found out that Hakoi is soulless, which was tremendously fun to play out.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God that Landry was there and able to give them a little bit of his good old soul food and get them back at least conscious enough to be like, the glaive that I put my soul in is back in the forge. I need that. We need to go get that right now, please.
Yes, because the soul food is unfortunately temporary, right?
Yes. It's like an hour, I think.
Yeah, something like that. I haven't even decided what it is yet. I guess it's how much you eat, you know?
Right. About an hour is what I've observed, but
yeah, that's probably fair.
Give or take. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole series of things that happened, including some questions that have been raised about Arrow's backstory now that everyone's like, that's an interesting reaction. But it did end with Kirin getting killed and then staked in his coffin.
Yes.
Which we were all very grateful for. We found a bunch of diamonds and a bunch of loot in his private little chamber. And we were on our way out. We were getting ready to leave. And then Riddle. I feel like all the good stories begin with, and then character name.
And then character name. So true. So true.
Riddle decided that she wanted to dip up into a chamber that we had passed. I say we, I was playing Valus.
Yeah. Valus was the name of the vampire.
I lost the name of the character I was playing for like three sessions. That's awful.
Edgy McEdgelord.
I had fun being the Edgy McEdgelord. But we had all passed that particular, like, way up there. We had been told that there was a smell of a narcotic up there, along with the whiff of brimstone, which I clocked and remembered.
Yes.
And we had run into a drow guy in the previous room who was like, you know, I'm here on this rack because my mistress wants me to be here. There are, in my opinion, a lot of signs that said, please don't go into that room.
Yeah, he literally was like, please don't go into that room. You're going to get me in trouble.
And then Riddle decided to go up into that particular room. And she found there a drow woman who murdered the drow man that had brought Riddle in there. And we later found out there was a cambion hanging out under the drow lady's skirts. You know, like you do, which I think was the source of that brimstone that we smelled.
Yep.
And Riddle got in a bit over her head, very much in over her head, because the lady turned out to be a priestess of Lolth who came out of the cradle doing politics and intrigue and murder. So, yeah, there was an attack. And then we all got involved. Riddle went unconscious. Lumet went unconscious. In the process of getting people out, Lumet actually died.
Yes, she died.
And Valus held the line for us with the third shard of Vindicator. I'm so upset about that.
That's a big part of the control issue.
Yeah.
Was that.
that was actually a big part of why I didn't have Valis like hold the line with the vampire to get everyone else out, was because I was like, we need that shard of Vindicator. And that was very much like my player brain taking over and overriding his paladin sense.
Right.
Which
yes.
was probably the wrong decision, but.
Right. But, you know, at that point, you were back to Hakoi.
I was back to Hakoi and had no control.
Well, Valis is back to me.
But yeah, Valis went back and held the line. We were able to get Lumet conscious again with a good diamond, which, that was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And then we all got out of there, trying very hard not to lash out too hard at Riddle while we were in the middle of everything.
Yeah, and Riddle was self-flagellating throughout
absolutely despondent.
Yeah, and was certainly taking responsibility for what she had done.
Which, in Hakoi's eyes, honestly, like, I think Hakoi might be the most forgiving of the group at this point about all of this.
Yes.
Because they're over here like, all right, you messed up. That was a huge mistake, and it was because of a quirk in your nature, but... You are, I mean, Hakoi very
learning.
She's learning. Hakoi sees her as an unfinished sword. Still needs to have a couple of those, like, weird quirks worked out.
100%. And you could absolutely see a forge-based character looking at most people.
As projects.
as projects, right? As things, right?
Which is certainly a thing with Hakoi to an extent.
Little by little, we continue to unveil the autism in all of our characters, right? and ourselves.
And ourselves. But yeah, that was basic. Like, there were definitely a couple of places where I think I could feel you wanting to just be like, okay, you know, the persuasion check that Fig did worked and you can just leave. Or
right.
I think I could feel a couple of the points where you were tempted.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments where I was like, come on, brain, come on.
Give them something.
Because I was like, there's no freaking way that this drow priestess of Lolth is going to be like, you know what, that's reasonable.
Yeah, they don't get to where they're at by being nice.
No, they don't, right? And, I mean, the priestesses of Lolth are some of the most privileged and paranoid people on the planet, and they are just, yeah, they're not good, right?
Oh, no. In fact, like, by definition, they're evil.
They're, like, super freaking evil, right? If you ever were to meet, like, a good priestess of Lolth, that would be a huge character turn, right?
Yeah, that would be a really interesting, wait, how did you get to that, and how did your lady not take your power away?
Right.
Because
or
she's
murder
a vengeful
you,
thing.
Or turn you into a drider, right? Like, there's all kinds of things that could occur there. But yeah, so there was a lot there that didn't go according to plan. I wasn't sure if you guys were going to beat Kieran Kirsalai, and I was fine with that. And I thought either they'll all get captured, they'll all escape, and then he can come back, or they'll beat him, and that's also okay. There's also the chance that they beat him, but then don't find his body.
Sure.
Right, because all the vampires do Misty Escape at the end. They return to their coffin, and then you have to find them in their coffin before they regenerate, which takes like an hour or two. I forget how long it is. And then they restore one hit point, right? And, you know, time was starting to move a little bit. And I was like, is he going to be awake? Is he going to know what's going on? So I wouldn't know how that was going to go. Do you guys manage to throw a net on him? Which he somehow failed.
That is incredible. The net is the real MVP of this particular game.
That thing came in clutch.
I have never seen a net be used that often. Nets and stone cunning, the two things you never see happen in a D&D game, are like clutch in this game.
So stone cunning came up twice already.
Twice? What? You know, in 10 sessions?
That's got to be a world record of the use of stone cunning. Which is fantastic. Yeah, he was, you know, on the one hand, I was like, I'm glad he's had his impact. He's been an important sort of first arc villain.
Mm-hmm.
But I am both okay with him coming back. I'm also okay with him not coming back.
Well, and him being killed, and then the drow lady being like, there are others who are graced by a patron, was the first inclination where it was like, oh no, this is way bigger than we thought it was, which is great.
Right. She gives away a little bit of information because in her mind, well, you're dead anyway, right?
It's a classic villain.
It's a classic villain mistake. It's a classic villain mistake, which you might not even notice right away, right? Because right now, you know, in Riddle's mind, it was like survive, survive, survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not think you guys were going to go back to that room. I thought if you did go to the room, somehow you guys are going to get away with stuff with like insane checks. Everything went wrong.
The dice were not in our favor. And it didn't help. It helped and didn't help that Riddle was the only one who went in there because she wanted to get the drugs.
And everybody else was like, we need to leave. And I'm not going to come with you because I want you to change your mind and also leave.
Yeah.
Right? They were like strongly hinting. Right? But a couple of people were like, I don't know. I'm not going to go down the hall, but I'm also not going to abandon you. You know? So the party was split three ways, which of course is always a great thing to do strategy-wise.
Strategy-wise, nah. Story-wise, every time.
Every time, yeah. The story was the real winner last
night. Yeah, the story definitely shone last night because a lot, and in my opinion, I think that it was one of the better like storytelling sessions that we've ever had.
Yeah, where
it was very much, there was plot. There was a lot of plot that happened, even if it was kind of subtle. There was a lot of character development that happened, a lot of growth and change. And we had some really epic moments that happened. Truly, like, Hakoi was terrified the whole time. Man, was that a great session.
Yeah. When I was like, the session's over, everybody was like, quiet, right? And when you don't have like cameras on and I can't see the faces, I'm like, are they pissed? Are they happy? Are they exhausted emotionally? Like,
there was a lot of emotion.
Yeah, there was. It was a very emotional session. Yeah, I kept thinking of episode as well, which maybe is a good thing. Maybe if it feels like an episode, that's a positive. But anyway, I didn't expect Riddle to do that. But then I was like, well, Riddle's a rogue. And so she'll beat them on initiative, and then she'll just
run.
Just run. She can cutting action dash. There's basically no way they can get her, right? And she lost initiative.
She went last in initiative. There was the drow lady, the Cambion, and Riddle.
Yeah.
And Riddle was third.
She got third place, you know.
That was so scary.
And then the Cambion gets up. He tries to use the command spell. He actually fails, and so I'm like, okay, we're good. We're Gucci, you know? Like, this is fine. And then the drow misses with her first attempt with... Oh, she uses web. And I was like, okay, so this is going to probably trap her, but I'm going to kind of target the dexterity of the rogue, which should give them a good chance to get away, right? And she does.
The gentle, like, leaving breadcrumbs of, here's how you can get out of here.
Right. She doesn't necessarily know what your skills are. She doesn't know not to target your dexterity, right? So let's have her target your dexterity. And while she does save, it's still difficult terrain. And so Riddle's able to get away, but not get away enough.
Yeah.
On the following turn, the Cambion again tries to use command. And again, fails.
We were all like, oh my gosh. Like, wisdom is not necessarily Riddle's highest score.
No, it's not. But the dice were singing, you know, in that case.
In that specific instance.
So the Cambion also had a bad night. You know, the Cambion, yes. I think, did very little except for one crucial thing. But then the priestess got up, used her snake lash, which I've been looking forward to using ever since I read Homeland years and years and years ago.
I see, because I was over here like, that's not something that I associate with drow, but cool.
No, yeah, that's a staple. That's like a standard issue weapon for the priestesses.
I don't know enough about drow, clearly.
Well, I didn't mean for this to end up having a drow chapter, but it might now, right?
I mean, we might be heading down to Menza Barazian, or however you pronounce that.
Yeah, Menza Barazian, which, great. That's something Andrew would... If Andrew had been in that group, he would have got up and be like, nope, I'm done.
Bye.
I am never going there again. No way, no how are you going to convince me? So the first hit misses, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is just classic. The monsters cannot keep up with PCs, you know, just how it is.
But then the second one.
But then the second one hit, which normally wouldn't have been that big a deal, except you guys had just gotten done with a bunch of fighting.
Ironically, Hakoi was the only one at full power because they hadn't been involved in the fight.
That's right. They hadn't been at full power. And so I thought, well, maybe Hakoi is just going to solo this whole thing, right? But, I mean, you guys are only level 5.
Yeah.
Right? And that's against a Cambion and a Drow Priestess of Loth.
The moment that Hakoi recognized that was a Drow Priestess of Loth, they were like, absolutely not. We are getting out of here right now. We will die. Yep. Like, there's a chance that we'll die in the getting out. If we stay, we will die.
Yeah, because the priestess did have enough wherewithal to realize she had given away some information. And so she needed to kill Riddle. That was the obvious answer. Oh, there's more of you, it turns out? Well, you all have to die now.
Whoops.
And I'm like, this is not the Drow chapter. This was not supposed to happen, right? When I came up with it, I was literally just putting things in the dungeon, right? I was just like, well, you know, what would be a cool story thing here? I don't want it to be like video gamey and there's just, you know, mobs in the way because, you know, that's always boring, right? But I was like,
let's put some plot in one of the corners.
Yeah, you know, okay, you know, Kieran Kirsalai, he's a half drow originally.
Oh.
So he has some connection there. You know, who would be the guest to a vampire, like, deep in his secret lair? The most evil, vile creatures and victims, right? There's nothing else that could possibly be there, right? So, a priestess of Loth who brings her slave with her to be tortured for her own pleasure, and a Cambion lover while they're both doing hard drugs, you know? And it smells like a hot topic in here. You know, and there's just like red and purple and pink light everywhere. It's super, super, you know, just tacky. Okay, that's cool. But, you know, if the players go in there, they're just going to mop these guys, you know, like they're nothing. It's like, yeah, if they're all at full power and know that they're about to get into a fight.
Exactly. Like if we had all gone in there, and even then, that was a narrow hallway. Like we would have had to have all been in the room, at which point we would have all been susceptible to being webbed.
Yep.
That was a kill box.
Yeah.
The way it was set up.
It really was. And the web spell's very good if there's walls and stuff around. It creates a lot of issues. And like the best way to get out of it is to set yourself on fire. Right? Which is also
not great.
It's also not great. So you guys, you just about got away from the interventions. But as soon as Lumet, the paladin, goes in to help Riddle, because of course you're going to help your friends. Whack. We get hit with that whip.
Yep.
And again, we just got done fighting a vampire warrior. You go down like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
Okay, the other allies come in to help, and this is where this is another part where I was like, do I exert control here?
Do you show the mercy and just let us get out?
And this is what was another example of, like, mercy is a form of control freakness, mm-hmm. right? And so, like, yeah, the monk comes in, or you came in, I forget who it was, but they grabbed Lumet.
That was me first, yeah.
That was you first, and then tried to move Lumet. But of course, that's going to incur, right? That's going to provoke an attack of opportunity because you're leaving the threatened space of the enemy.
Yeah, that was down toward the bottom because Riddle was between Lumet and the actual attack.
It happened twice. One was against Riddle and one was against Lumet.
Yes.
Those opportunity attacks.
And Lumet was when I was hauling her out of the web.
Yes.
So that was down at the bottom there, not immediately. Basically, we were dragging people away, and bad guys are smart, and they decided to attack the unconscious bodies and with their attacks of opportunity.
Yeah, which, of course, are automatic critical hits. And like we explained last episode, you know, that's two saving throw failures. And then there was just a bad roll once for Lumet, and that was it. And for it, there was also a bad roll for Riddle at some point, but Riddle, eventually the turn got to Fig in time for Fig to cast Bear the Dying, but that was only after Lumet had already passed on by, I mean, you know?
Died,
yeah, bit it, bought the farm, right?
Yeah.
And so they, and then I'm like, okay, well now how are they going to get away from the drow? I mean, these guys are just going to wipe the whole damn party, you know? It's over. The story is over, right? And then I was like, well...
You even made the joke. Think about what...
Think
like,
about campaign, what you want to play next.
Think about what campaign you want to do next, guys, because this one's looking like we're going to be wrapping it tonight. So I was like, no.
Yeah, it was looking over. I was about ready to call it. And so... but then I thought, oh, here's an opportunity that's presented itself. And here's where I got to step backward a little bit. I realized I had established earlier on that there were three shards of the epic sword, the Vindicator. And we had basically been given the first one.
Yeah.
The second one you knew was being held by the vampire. And the third one you had discovered was grafted into the arm of a former Shadowbane. After, like, in the middle of last session, after the fight, we realized, oh my gosh, they have access.
All three.
They have access to all three.
We
I guess
all
that's
three
fine.
With us in the party at that time. Riddle had one, Vela's had one, and then we were carrying the third one. It was like we not just had access to them, we had all three of them in our hands.
100%. 100%. And here it was, ready to go, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, on the one hand, I didn't really want them to have it this early. But on the other hand, I mean, they overcame the CR rules, and they defeated not only a vampire warrior, but also, like, three Marengons. Three or four, I forget what it was, but, like, you guys weren't supposed to win that.
I kind of figured that was a made-to-lose fight.
Yeah, I was like, well, I mean, they're splitting their party to go get Hakoi. There's no way this doesn't become just a rescue operation where they get out, and they have to try to get the shard another way, right? But, you know, PCs are broken.
Especially when they're A, used smartly, and B, when you get a natural 20 on a strength roll to rip the freaking statue off the wall to go find the chamber.
Yeah, that was freaking cool, right?
That was very cool.
I love when moments like that happens. Like, I just make players feel like they're so
Lumic,
cool.
Lumic got two nat 20s at the best times for her character.
One of them being the final blow struck against Kieran Kirsalai.
Yep.
And, you know, having the vampire strike that last hit after being netted by the barbarian, like, that was like team tactics at its finest.
Yeah.
He's like, I can handle this, no problem. And then, did you seriously just throw a net at me? No one has ever thrown a net at me. Ever. Ma'am, hold on. Ma'am?
Ma'am?
And then, ka-chow. I'm like, well, that's it.
That was so good.
GG.
She did like 60 points of damage in that single blow. That was amazing.
Paladins be like.
Paladins be like, especially on that 20, especially with a smite.
Especially when smite does extra damage automatically to undead. You know,
love it.
There's, I'm like, Strahd's a big guy, but Paladin exists, right?
It's true.
You know, and this guy is only stat-wise a little different than Strahd. And so anyway, he's defeated, and you guys are able to find his coffin. You kill him. You loot his trove, which is filled with weapons ready to collect souls. One of them being the third shard of Vindicator. And I was like, well, they've got it. You know, they've earned it. That was tough. But, you know, there's still plenty to do.
Yeah.
Right? Even having the sword, there's other issues.
Yeah.
So
lots of issues.
There's lots of issues in this world. So they all have them. And I'm tempted at some point, I'm like, I need to figure out a way to get one of these shards away from them, you know?
And then the opportunity presented itself on a silver platter because Velis is still a paladin.
At heart,
even with all of the stuff that's happened to him, with that one shard of Vindicator grafted into his arm, he went back and held the line.
He had good reasons that had been established to do what he had done, right?
It made perfect sense, which is why I was swearing a lot under my breath, but McCoy didn't stop him.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been tacky if he had come out of nowhere. Right. Mm-hmm. If he had been the Deus Ex Machina, which is also the enemy, right? Like, just never do that.
Yeah.
But instead of being a Deus Ex Machina, he's a sacrifice. He is a consequence.
Yeah.
Right. And so you guys lose him as an ally. And yes, this is canon. He is destroyed in this battle.
I wondered because of the Ash thing.
Yeah, I mean, in fantasy, everything's possible, I suppose. But the intent for now, at least, is that he's gone bye-bye. But the other thing that goes bye-bye is the grafted shard in his arm.
Which is probably with that bloody priestess.
Yep. Who had said specifically she was from Menzel Baranzen.
Yeah.
And so,
all of us who can't see in the dark are going to have to go into the Underdark.
Yeah.
Great.
Or wait for her to bring it up to assassinate you with it.
You know, that's also an option.
You know, but that's a big if. Yeah. Did I plan on having a Menzel Baranzen chapter in this game? No. No, I did not.
Now you're going to have to plan that, because the chances are very good that we're going to go after that once Okoye figures out how to cleanse the piece that we have from the vampire.
So I think that about covers, you know, what had largely been done in that session and the temptations that I had faced throughout the session to go easy on you guys, to save you from yourselves, to, you know, pull punches, right? But then realizing that it's just another form of control.
Mm-hmm.
And then to relinquish that ended up producing a much better story than I would have told from making things up, right? That's where the story becomes collaborative. And it becomes interactive with each other, and we're all doing it together as opposed to you all sitting and getting, right? It's just not what anyone wants to do.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't say that. There's some people out there that just want to be along for the ride and don't want to decide anything ever. But
I mean, I guess, but at that point, I have lots of books that I haven't read piled
precisely
up. And
yeah,
if I wanted to have that, I would just like sit and read a book, one of the many books that I've picked up because I hang out on Book Talk too often.
100%. No disagreement. So mercy is a form of control. Control is the enemy. Control prevents a better story from being told. Choice and consequence are sacred. And we already know these things, but I just want to like reiterate them. Like, thou shalt not remove choice for any reason. Not knowing the outcome is fun. It's fun for the GM who otherwise doesn't get to enjoy surprises. So allow yourself to enjoy surprises.
Yeah, which can be very hard because, as you've said, a lot of people who are in GMing tend to be a little bit more on the control freak side. So, you know, a surprise for a lot of people isn't fun.
Nope.
It's the, oh my God, now I have to think about what to do. I got completely derailed. What do I do?
Yeah. But they also don't want that punishment to be out of nowhere. They don't want it to feel like it is a punishment. Because consequence we like, but punishment we don't like.
Yeah.
And the line there is fuzzy. Right.
It can be. And yeah, it's definitely one of those moments where it's like, I think we were chatting about this before we started recording. I think you put it very well, where it's, you know, one is against the player and one is the result of what the character does.
Yeah, so I that's exactly right. So punishment is player-directed, consequence is character-directed. Which is to say, I did not want Chris to come away from that session feeling like we, the rest of the players, and the GM were judging him.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't want him to feel like he had sinned against us.
No.
Right? I wanted him to feel like he had enhanced the story and had created conflict and drama in a way that was helpful.
And for the record, from my perspective as a fellow player, A, I was not surprised because I've played the game with Chris before.
That's right.
This has happened before.
Well, also, what am I punishing him for? Like, being interested in my game?
Yeah, being in, like, he said it in the game, I died for content. He went looking to see what you had put up in that room. It was a very natural curiosity. And I love that. So A, I wasn't surprised, and B, I love it. I think it makes for some really great character stuff, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, no, I'm super happy he did that, because I wasn't actually sure what I was going to do with that last, you know, hour.
I mean, you know full well that we could have spent that whole time just role-playing and dealing 100%. With the consequence, because, like, Hakoi has just gone through hell. Yeah, Hakoi has just gone through hell, and everyone's very worried about them.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And Luma just died. So, like, we have a lot of stuff going on.
Yep, and Fig is concerned about everyone. And, you know, Bugu's up there. You know, we got to get back to Bugu.
Bugu's so good.
Anyway, he did something that was really, really fun. And we wanted, we did want Riddle to feel bad. Sure. We wanted Riddle to feel like she had really messed up and maybe even to suffer, but we didn't want Chris to feel that way.
Exactly.
Right? Like, and I don't think Chris does, hopefully. And
hopefully not.
Hopefully not. So Chris made a wonderful comic that night, because Chris is also an artist, and had made a little comic of his character in a press conference, you know, on the news. And it was like said, I did it for content. And then there was like also a banner on the bottom that was like Kira Kirsalai still missing or something like that. And it was just, it was perfect. It was
we were
perfect.
All giggling a lot at that. It was fantastic.
Oh, man. By the way, one of my other favorite things about our sessions is that I try to wait to the very end. And I go back through the Discord because I haven't been looking at the chat. And I see all the GIFs and memes that people have posted. And it's so fun to get this, like, out-of-context recap of the session as it was. So fun. So fun to go through all those. It's a little Easter egg for me. It's a little good boy chocolate, you know, that I get.
I actually do recommend that if people have time to just, like, look and find where the game days are and see what story you can reconstruct from the GIFs and the memes that we put up there and the, like, side comments that happen. Because, like, anything that I actually want Adam to see, I usually put into the Roll20 chat.
Yes. Yeah. So, 100%. And, you know, it'd be like a messed up game of telephone, right?
It's just so funny.
Just try to roll your real life investigation check to see if you can put these clues together. Yeah. So the other thing that we do when we relinquish this kind of control is we teach players a degree of responsibility, but not just like, oh, you need to take responsibility for your mistakes, like, which is, I guess is true. But I also don't want to come off as, like, condescending, right? And so it's more that, oh, I have real power, actually.
Yeah, take responsibility for the story, I think, is more what you're saying there.
Right, exactly. Like, it's responsibility, but it's also agency, right? The things that I do will be tolerated.
And not just tolerated, celebrated.
Celebrated, and then also there may be consequences for good and ill, right? And so hopefully that gives the players a sense that they have real agency in the story. I hope so, you know? And because one thing I have experienced in the past are players being reckless because they kind of low-key know that there's not real consequence. on the horizon, or players being in rebellion because they feel like there's no control.
Sure.
Right? Where it's like, no matter what we do, we're getting back on the rail. Right? And I resent this.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I run into when I'm running module stuff, because that has been my experience as a GM, is only module stuff. And I think that there is a certain degree of resentment, maybe. I think maybe you're right about that, where it's like, no matter what we do, we have to go and do this. We have to talk to these people, and we have to get up to Wave Echo Cave to go fight the spider.
Yeah.
These are the points that we have to hit, and everything else is extraneous and not super meaningful.
Yes.
And I think that that does breed a certain amount of resentment, which I've been thinking a lot about lately.
So here's how I would redo all those books, right? Because I've been thinking about this lately. I've been wanting to run modules as well. I want to run a module again. However, I want to completely gut it. And okay. So
strip like, it not just, the studs.
Not just change it. I want to gut it. And because how do you maintain player agency in a story that has already been written, right? Mm-hmm. It's literally the argument of free will versus determinism, right? Like that we're trying to square a circle here.
Sure.
What I want to do is I want to pick a module. I'm not sure which one yet. And I want to remove all of the plot. And I want to only make a list of the characters with their motivation and their plan, right? And those things are happening regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that the players learn is from their observation and investigation, right? But the world exists, and then they're in it. And then plot unfolds as a consequence of what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? But there isn't, like, a linear story necessarily. Well, I mean, there is one.
Yeah, but it's one that the players create, because has to be linear, because it's one thing happens after another, but it's not a predetermined linearity.
So, yeah, between sessions, you take notes on what happened, and then you go, okay, well, what are the consequences and what's going to happen? And then I'm going to look at, like, my story circle and all my stages that are supposed to happen. I go, okay, what would be a good story because this happened?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so a big part of, like, effective GMing is what you do right after the session when your memory is still fresh or when Tanya has released the recording. Then you get
we
to,
love you for that.
We absolutely do. I mean, I appreciate it because I am a forgetful GM sometimes. And if I don't write it the very next day or even that evening, I tend to get things wrong, right? Or I tend to forget things that are important to players that maybe weren't as important to me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And being able to also listen to a recording is, like, so helpful because there's things I miss, right?
Yeah, and you can pause and go back and go, oh, wait, what was that reaction?
Yeah, what was that again?
What was that?
So I love that stuff, you know, and I really appreciate it. Anyway, for me, last night's session sort of solidified a lot of ideas, and they didn't necessarily teach me anything new, but they reinforced lessons that, you know, we kind of let atrophy in our mm-hmm. minds, because we get, of course, you know, we have lives and we have our life that we're doing, and we get distracted with all of our IRL problems, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I have this game. I got to do the thing, you know? And then it's like,
I do that even with streamed games, even when it is kind of a part of my quote-unquote job. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of real-life stuff going on, and it's easy to let that slide.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I have definitely been guilty of, okay, I got to have some content for them to do. So I'm going to make a map, and now I've made my map, and now it's uploaded into Roll20. Okay, let's do the lights. Okay, all the lights are done. Crap, we're up in an hour.
What's the story?
Okay, we're going to look up how to do some balanced encounters here. What monster fits the CR? Okay, great. Plug, 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 plug. Hopefully I can wing the rest. hey, everybody, welcome to the next session.
And I mean, you are a skillful and experienced enough GM that you are able to just wing it. But I feel like that's not satisfying for you.
You're 100% correct. Yeah, I feel like, oh, God, I can't believe it. I didn't do the thing. I'm trash, you know. And then, the best outcome there, especially if I didn't have a lot of time, is to be like, hopefully Chris is going to tell me what my story is, right? Like, that would be... Tiana's pretty creative, you know. They'll probably come up with something I can use, you know. Yeah, that's so helpful, you know, when players give you that stuff. But you have to be able to listen.
You have to be able to listen. You have to be able to implement it. But also, you know, there's a certain wonder too that of being able to give that agency to players. But I think that preparation with the consequences, good and bad, is kind of important for that.
Yeah, and that there's consequences, but also like the players aren't in full control either, right? And that could be another trap that you get into. It's like, oh, my GM's really cool about me doing stuff, so let me create an entire conspiracy board of everything I want to do.
Right.
And let me take full control of the reins, and the GM can just sit there and watch me.
Yeah. And I mean, then, conspiracy boards are fun, especially if you make the mistake of letting the GM see it and they go, oh, no, that's better. Let me use some of that.
I actually created a conspiracy board this last session or this last week because and this informed kind of my idea about using the modules. I've been running a game that's based in Runeterra, the League of Legends universe, and the League of Legends universe doesn't tell you all the mysteries that are happening, but all they have are like character and like location descriptions, and they actually present it in a really pretty cool way. And so I had to figure out what the plans were and who was pulling the strings behind the scenes. And as I was reading through each description, I started to discover.
That's a very Dark Souls way of telling the story, where it's
exactly
like item location, item and location descriptions and character comments, even just like throwaway comments or where they happen to be. Or that's a really cool way to tell a story. It's also, you need a murder board in order to figure out what in the heck is going on.
Yeah. And so I actually created a flowchart, and I had my red strings going all over the place.
Yes.
And I started to discover some very interesting things about the lore. And now I can't wait to share them with my players. And I almost don't feel like I have to plan as much session per session because I know what the consequences are of every action.
I'm just waiting for you to start your YouTube series about the lore of Runeterra.
The lore. It's just going to be me, like, doing the Charlie, you know, meme from Always Sunny, you know. And, like, I don't smoke, but, you know, maybe I'll have a Tootsie Roll or something.
Have a candy cigarette.
A candy cigarette. Like, let me tell you, you know. I'll go, like, Alex Jones, but fun. You know, funny, ironic Alex Jones type.
Alex Jones is funny until you listen to what he's actually saying, because his presentation is hysterical until you listen to the awful, awful things that he's saying.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is the audience in this case.
I mean, he's not helping.
Yeah, I need to make another Alex Jones stand-in character, you know, where he's like always just hawking pills at you and is just freaking out about nothing, you know? Anyway, I hope you guys had fun, but I also hope you're all emotionally exhausted from last night. I've talked a lot. Can you sum up what we've done today? Can you bring this kind of together? Can you put a button on it?
I mean, in essence, I think the most important thing, and I think this is mostly for GMs this time, is don't be afraid to let go of the reins. Adam and I are very similar in GMing style in this way, that we both are like, ooh, I don't want them to get hurt necessarily. Mm-hmm. I want them to be afraid, but never be in any actual danger. But the moment that your players figure that out, the game's up.
Yeah, it's because, a problem.
Because they know there's no actual consequences. And if there's no consequences, then what's the point? So I think that letting go, like you said, letting go of control is very important. And that comes in the form of both, like, you are only going to go down this one path, which is what we think of when we say control. But also what you said about mercy and lightening up being a kind of control. It's like, no, the monsters know what they're doing.
Yes.
If the players go a particular direction and you planted something there and there it's there to be found, let the dice fall where they will. Yeah. And we did. And it was great. And it opened up a lot of doors. There's some amazing character stuff that is coming up because of it. And I know that that's very hard to let go of sometimes. But again, if you want to have ultimate control over what your characters do, write a book.
Write a book.
So, yeah, I think that that's like the summation of it all. And I do truly believe that it's a better story when the GM lets go of that aspect of control and is like, you know, don't be the merciful God. Don't be the vengeful God. Don't be a God. Be another player.
No. So true. Yeah, I mean, we always joke about that. But yeah, I mean, you're not. And you could be, but, you know.
But then people don't want to be at your tables.
People also tend to grow out of their gods.
Boy, Adam and I can certainly attest to that.
Well, if you're still here, thank you for joining us for an episode of Inspiration Point. I think that was a beautiful summation. No notes. Thank you so much. Just really appreciate being here with you and all the work that you do to Aww. Make this show happen. Anyway, why don't you close us out?
I can certainly do that. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode of Inspiration Point. We hope that you have been given some food for thought as we talk about some of the experiences that we recently had in the TTRPG world. Again, do come and join us in the Discord. We have some great conversations there. See if you can put together some of what happens in the sessions that we don't talk about on the show, because there's a lot of fun, like, GIFs and memes that show up in the Westgate section of the server where it's like, if I wasn't in the game, I might not know what's going on. It's great fun. Yeah, feel free to join us at our Patreon if you want to join at the Muse tier. I'm sure eventually Adam's going to start another Muse tier campaign.
Coming up soon, actually.
If we get another group of people for that, which would be fantastic. And until next time, stay inspired.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspiration Point. If you'd like to support what we do, go and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint. If you can't support us directly, that's okay. You can also help support us by telling people about the podcast. A little inspiration goes a long way.
Inspiration Point is edited and produced by Tiana Hansen and is distributed by Quest and Chaos. If you like what you hear with us, give Quest and Chaos YouTube or Twitch channels a visit. They play Dungeons & Dragons on a weekly basis and have a bunch of campaigns of Call of Cthulhu, D&D, and board game playthroughs archived on their YouTube.
Join us next week for more inspiration.